Our little group of four from the Indonesian project, which I'm going to talk about now, we've invested a lot of hope in this meeting. So I really would appreciate it, and I'm sure we would, Dr. Ageng, Dr. Mariano and Dr. Miller over there, if you could give us some energy and feedback here. We'll try to give you as much as we've learned, but we're very keen to hear what you've learned here in India. So this is the field that we've been working in, as you have in India, and I want to talk about real-world lessons learned. So it's all very well to talk about these BMPs in a room like this, but when you actually start doing it on the ground, what happens? And we've been doing this work since in a period 2008 to 2011. So we're about, I don't know, maybe 4 or 5 years behind what you've been doing here in India. We've got a lot to learn, but I believe we've learned some important lessons as well. Now, these lessons are based on the findings of two projects that we've done, what I'll call the BMP project, Improving Productivity and Profitability of Smallholder Shrimp Aquaculture and Related Agribusinesses in Indonesia, BMP project, and a small research activity, which is SRA, 2009-11, Determinants. This is a molecular epidemiology study, Determinants for White Spot Disease Outbreaks in Indonesian Smallholder Shrimp Ponds. All of these are funded by the Australian Government, which is the Australian Centre for International Agricultural Research. So the background to this BMP project, the big project, over 90% of Indonesia's 600,000 hectares of brackish water ponds are operated by smallholder farmers, usually using traditional polyculture methods, 1 to 2 shrimp per square metre, plus milkfish. These ponds produce less than 50% of Indonesia's farmed shrimp, mainly monodon. So if you put all of the vanamei and monodon in Indonesia together, these guys produce less than 50%, even though they're operating a huge area of ponds, usually mixed with milkfish. But a major national initiative calls for substantial increases in shrimp production up to the year 2014. So this initiative calls for a further 60% for monodon and 120% for vanamei. Indonesia actually wants to become the major aquaculture producer in the region or in the world? Again, do you remember? In the world. Okay, so there's a steep mountain to climb here, but the government authorities are committed to trying. Provincial and district governments are committed via their assistance programs to revitalising the traditional shrimp sector, and to do that, these smallholder shrimp farmers are going to have to overcome a lot of problems, which we'll talk about. And I'd just like to say, having listened to the discussions this morning, we know very little about the medium to long-term aspirations of these farmers. What do they want for themselves? Do they want to be shrimp farmers for the rest of, or aquaculturists for the rest of their lives? And what do they want for their children in the context of a rapidly changing world, globalising world? And we'll discuss some of those issues as we go along. Just a little bit of orientation. White spot disease is the main problem, as it is here in India. Most farming areas in Indonesia are saturated with white spot virus in all of the variety of carriers that you can find in those locations. So that many of the ponds are just growing milkfish or they're idle, nothing happening. Another challenge, adverse pond and local infrastructure conditions are nearly universally present. There's hardly, you can't find an ideal shrimp growing site, at least I haven't seen it yet, in Indonesia. So this is excess sludge, leaking dikes, acid sulfate soils, very common, shallow ponds, these macrophytes that proliferate in low saline areas, low embankments, poorly flushed canals, etc. Also, the farmers are very conservative and resource poor, and they usually need solid proof that any practice change is going to be to their benefit. And who do they get that proof from? Other farmers, not from people like us. They don't care what we say. And most of them are going to need credit if they're going to implement BMP programs. So, evidence-based advocacy. Before we advocate these BMP program adoption to Indonesian smallholder farmers, we have to have solid scientific evidence that they are beneficial. So far, we haven't got that yet. And as I understand it, it hasn't really been done in a rigorous scientific way in India either. So my point here is, it's all very well for the likes of us, academics, to be advocating these things, but the consequences are going to be felt by these resource-poor people down here, and I won't sleep well at night, and I know my colleagues won't either, unless we're doing something that's going to be good for them. So the objectives of our project was to prove that BMP programs can deliver profitable crops in most cases. We call that proof of concept and prove that the farmers will adopt the program's proof of delivery. So two things, proof of concept, do they work, and can we deliver them effectively? Oh, these are all the project partners. I won't go through them, but just to say some University of Sydney, Director General Aquaculture, Ministry of Marine Affairs and Fisheries, Indonesia, Marine Affairs and Fisheries, Central Java. You should know that in Indonesia, the government is set up in three levels. So there's the central government in Jakarta, there's the provincial government, and there's the district government. And actually, out on the ground, it's the district government that has the money and the power. So we're working with all of these agencies and a number of consultant groups, Gajah Mada, Hasanuddin, Charles Sturt University. University of Adelaide did a supply chain study for us, which I'll talk about, and an economic consultant. So just before I go any further, ACR, who's funding this program, is a research for development agency. So what we did was research. It wasn't sort of social engineering or whatever. We had to do a three-step approach to these BMP programs with steps one and two running in parallel. Proof of concept, do the programs significantly improve productivity and profitability? So we had two structured studies under there, an outcome study and a compliance productivity profitability relationship study. And then proof of delivery, do the programs or does our extension approach enable program adoption by the farmers? No use having a great program if the farmers are not adopting for whatever reason. So we had an extension impact study, a value chain study, and then pilot rollout. So by the end of 2011, we aimed to have 300, very modest target, adopting the project, the programs. And we did this work in Central Java, this coastline along here, between 2008 and 2011, progressively with increasing numbers of ponds, a bit like you had in India with your scaling up diagram, that conical shape. Similarly, in South Sulawesi, we did a number of implementations across the same period with the same view in mind, to increase the numbers of participating ponds. So our basic approach was to identify an active, well-led farmer group, and I've got these in inverted commas because what looks like active and what looks like a group and what looks like cooperation may not always be what they tell you. Confirm the site suitability based on simple soil testing, pond structure layout, farming practice, potential for biosecurity. This is how we started. Provide agreed inputs, provide continuous on-site technical support, a bit like you guys did here. Provide training and resourcing, and this is an important one, to district government extensionists. They're called DINAS, responsible for facilitating farmer group meetings across the cropping period. We had these starting point BMPs, simple ones, which, you know, of course had numbers of subsets, but maintain a unified and disciplined farmer group. All this we got from India, so we copied, for which we're very grateful. Maximise pond biosecurity, maintain optimal pond conditions, and maximise profitability. We use the Indonesians favoured a system where they had these in green here, the grow-out, one or more grow-out ponds, surrounded by biofilter, what they call biofilter ponds, so that these are shrimp-free ponds where you can hold water for more than the mandatory 5 days before you take it into your grow-out ponds. That's meant to be a way of minimising the risk of white spot virus coming into these ponds, the grow-out ponds in green, during grow-out. And I won't go into all of this, but across the years from 2007 to 2011, we did all those implementations in the Central Java and South Sulawesi, and we did various sorts of activities to try to prove the concept of the BMPs. Do they work? Similarly, we did a set of activities to try to prove that we could deliver them across that period. We did all that in partnership with government programs. So the Indonesian government gives assistance to shrimp farmers in the various areas where we were working. And because we want this activity to continue beyond the life of our project after 2011, we work closely with these program deliverers. And these guys are very committed to this this activity. They want shrimp farming Monodon to prosper in their areas of responsibility. So we work very closely with them as a farmer group leader here. These are some of the government guys. After 4 years, what have we got? Proof of concept, we've not yet validated the programs. Proof of delivery, we did not reach our target of more than 300 farmers. Why? Well, one convenient excuse is that severe unseasonal flooding at our definitive study sites in 2010-11 was a major factor. Our study sites of what? 120 ponds were flooded. Looked like a lake, they said. Looked like a lake. However, many of our pre-project assumptions proved false, and that's what I want to talk about here now. And during the project, we learned many important lessons. I want to express our gratitude to the India group, the Impeta group here, and the Nuxa group, and the work that was done in Aceh for these factors behind the success of the group approach, which was posted on the NACA website, which we've used in recent years as the yardstick for these kinds of activities. Not always attainable in our experience, but that's what we aimed at. Our starting assumptions were too simplistic. The real-world operating environment of smallholder shrimp farming in Indonesia is much more complex and dynamic than we expected. And I get the feeling that it's the same way here in India. Yeah? It's shifting all the time. And what we're talking about in this room is probably an idea that was generated a few years ago, and we have to make sure it's adapting as we go. Yeah. Lesson number one. We don't yet know enough about the target farmers, their activities and their aspirations. We need to understand the socioeconomic factors driving these farmers and their groups. They're all internally diverse and different. Every group. They're not predictable. Most of them are village-based, about 30 members. Many, now this is interesting, typically in Indonesia, they convene temporarily to access government assistance. As soon as that assistance is gone, they're gone. They're no longer a functioning group. Leaders are often driven by self-interest rather than by concern for the wider group welfare. This is not a criticism. This is what people do in the real world. We all do this. Some farmers, importantly, have off-farm jobs and they pay little attention to their ponds between stocking and harvest. So when we're talking about compliance with BMPs on a daily basis, difficult. And these guys can put everybody else at risk. Some farmers rent their ponds and they're usually the resource-poor ones. So they're reluctant to implement BMP programs, which may threaten their income stream. Some of them, they don't want to set up a biofilter pond because they want to grow shrimp in there. They don't want to keep a shrimp-free pond. They don't want to spend money on preparing the pond bottom. They want to get that pond straight into production. Forget about this drying business. We want to use this pond now. And they're not interested in excluding wild shrimp, which may be carrying white spot virus. They want to harvest it. That's their weekly income for their family. Yeah? How do you work with this? Some farmers may publicly agree to comply with the BMPs, but they don't in reality. They go home and they don't comply. Here's another example of the world is changing. Our supply chain study that was done in South Sulawesi came up with some really interesting findings. Okay, across the top, farmer, wholesaler, broker, processor. The traditional farmers in South Sulawesi, that's the chain they operate in, and they produce 40% of the total shrimp, Monodon plus Vaname. Pretty much everything they produce is Monodon. Now, there's this interesting group called the Modernizers, and they've changed from Monodon to Vaname, and they've become more intensive, and they operate along this chain, and this has only happened in the last several years. This group has emerged from this group of traditionals, but they've modernized, and now they're producing 14%. The already intensive farms in South Sulawesi are producing 14. All these, this 14, this 14, and this 24, are all Vaname. These guys, Monodon. So there's an integrated group with some private companies. Okay, look at the breakdown on these. The traditional, the modernizer, and the intensive. 2.5 hectares. So these modernisers have just come out of this group, as I said. Intensive have got bigger farms. Monadon, Vaname. Output per year, you can see quite a difference. 450 kilograms, 800 kilograms milkfish, 4 metric tons, 30 metric tons. How many of these people? 10,000 of these traditionals producing less than 50% of the shrimp. The other 50% are produced by these this population and this group down here. Small, tiny number. So their production share, 48%, it used to be 95% and is still declining. It's going down. Question is a similar thing happening in India? And if you want to improve the livelihoods of smallholder shrimp farmers, is it better to encourage the traditional, some of them, that want to make the jump to go into here? And we'll see some numbers about what the benefits might be in a minute. And you'll lift your production at the same time. But what will happen to the remainder here, the residuals? What will happen to them? Will they all have to look for off-farm jobs? Who knows? So, again, look at their product differentiation, cost per hectare. So the traditionals can sell organic, as Dr. Arging described earlier. No product differentiation for these, none for these. Cost per hectare, look, cost per kilo, and profits, substantially higher for the modernisers and, of course, the intensives. So there's a big incentive to become a modernizer if that's what you're so inclined to do. But you need invest. To make the jump, you need something like $2,800, US or Australian dollars, I might say. They're now equal. Are we lucky? For a little while. $4,500 for these guys to make the transition. So we see these as the hard choices facing traditional farmers. To play the modernising game, farmers need both market sophistication and scale. These smallholder farmers can participate in modernising chains and increase their profits either by entering into contract schemes, that is with private companies, or starting cooperatives. Some of them come in with private companies, some form cooperatives and invest in production and traceability capacity, and currently this has always involved changing to Vaname. Our question is there a way to significantly increase the profits for these smallholder guys by staying with Monadon? Can it be done? The second lesson, our BMP programs are probably more complex than they need to be. You don't need to be able to read this. All you need to know is that these were our mandatory sort of headings for BMP programs. And biosecurity's got a lot of things that the farmers have to do. We don't know if all of those are necessary. They're kind of generic. Put crab fences around your ponds. Really? Do you have to do that? Use those screens. What if most of the infection comes in zooplankton, which goes straight through those screens? So that's why we did the small research activity, the SRA, in South Sulawesi last year, and we tracked. This was longitudinal study number 4, yeah, carrying on from the 3 that were already done in India under ACR Impeda NARCA program. And results are not in yet, but we got all these purple and red ponds got white spot outbreaks. So we're currently finding out what happened, where did these genotypes come from, and how did they spread one pond to the other? Maybe if we know that, we can simplify the BMPs and make them less costly. Careful, pre-implement. Lesson number 3. This is the point of the question I asked earlier. Pre-implementation site assessment is essential. The simple assessment's no good. You need to know if there's a proper canal system. Are the ponds physically suitable? Is the soil suitable? Particularly in relation to pH and seepage loss. Are the ponds in a tight biosecure cluster? That's what the point of that discussion before, because one or two non-compliers in there can wreck the whole cluster. It's all gone. Test to seed available, less than 6 hours transport time to the pond. We're interested in optimising the output of these farmers by helping them with their shrimp grow other high-value commodities, herbivorous finfish, carnivorous finfish. Are they available? Are farmers skilled in preparing ponds and maintaining good pond conditions, and is there an effective market chain? Here's some of the physical site issues. Look at the soil type. This was a study site we were thinking about for our SRA. There's about 50 ponds in there. So we did a survey of the soil. We mapped the soil in that site in South Sulawesi. Now, what is it?
Yeah, this is sand.
proportion of sand across the site. Blue is high, red is low. So to have, there could be high seepage across, say, across this dike here, but very low seepage across this dike here because of the different soil types present. How do you deal with that when you're implementing BMPs with a group of farmers in a sort of a uniform way? Very difficult in the real world. Similarly, here's another site in South Sulawesi, when one of our early implementations. Where is it? There's a little pond in here somewhere. We went in there without knowing anything much about how critical soil type was, and particularly how important canal function was to the ability to use BMPs properly in this pond. We used it as a demonstration pond. It crashed. The soil was acid, and this pond, this canal, look at the flow rates. This is very low flow rates up to high flow rates. The water in this canal hardly moved during the whole study period, 100 days or whatever it was. It just oscillated backwards and forwards, you know, maybe a few hundred metres. Anything, lots of these ponds in here had white spot disease outbreaks. They released their infected water into this canal and that canal, and it just sloshed backwards and forwards, probably being taken into our canal here, which into our pond, which is one of the reasons why it crashed. Hard lessons. Lesson number four. The district level extension system in Indonesia is seriously dysfunctional. We've put a lot of effort into training and resourcing the district level extensionists during the course of our project. But even now, they're very reluctant to go out and work with the farmers implementing BMP programs. Why? They say lack of confidence. But we believe systemic institutional factors are also involved. A study of the agricultural extension system in Indonesia was done in 2005, and they noted the extension workers received very little training. Other major constraints to effective service delivery included poor remuneration, inadequate infrastructure, unclear job direction, and they concluded that unless these constraints are addressed, the system will remain unable to deliver the information and skills necessary for farmers to overcome poverty. So unless it's fixed, it's never going to work. So how do we deliver these messages to farmers beyond the life of our project? We took this issue to ACR, our funding agency, in 2009. They agreed to fund a constraints to adoption workshop, but later they withdrew that offer. Despite solid promises, we will do it. The real world. The consequences of this deficit in extension service capability, it has concrete consequences. For example, this is a group of 24 ponds where we implemented BMPs in 2009 in Central Java. All of these ponds, except the green ones, which were sort of barrier ponds. We set them up in case we had outbreaks and the infection wouldn't spread, hopefully, to the ponds on the other side of the barrier. What happened? Everything was cooking along nicely, except some of the farmers in these red ponds here decided that the survival wasn't high enough for their satisfaction, and they did an illicit restocking, second stocking, over the top of what we'd already put in. We put in PCR test negative shrimp into all PLs into all these ponds. These guys went out and bought some more, didn't test them, threw them in. We got outbreaks, and the whole thing crashed. Why? We attribute the outbreaks to failure by the farmer group leader and the extensionist to foster group unity and discipline. Very important. Lesson five. Not too many more of these lessons. Training and field study methodology, because we're doing research, particularly systematic data collection and recording, was urgently needed. So during the course of our studies, we had often significant shortfalls in data, which made it very difficult to come to solid conclusions about what we found. One of the solutions was to produce these data collection workbooks. These things have 20 pages. They're Excel files, workbooks, each one with a one-page worksheet covering various factors, all in Bahasa Indonesia. And they've been a big help, but it's not the whole answer. So what's the way forward that we see? Our project has recently, given that it's ended, those two projects have recently been reviewed by an outside group of reviewers, and favourably recognising the steep learning curve that we negotiated through the 4 years. What do they say is the way forward? A multidisciplinary systems approach is essential. I'm a veterinarian. I've got expertise in aquatic animal health, but I don't know anything much about supply chains, socioeconomics, and all those other things, physical land use issues. If you're going to do this properly, you need a multidisciplinary team. You must have it. That's our feeling. And the first step, conduct hard-headed real-world situation analyses. What would they focus on? Indonesian smallholder brackish water systems. There's so many different farming systems that we're asked to accommodate our BMPs to. These guys want to grow wild shrimp in their ponds. These guys want to let water in and out every so often. These guys want to do something else. So how do you accommodate what looks like a rigid set of BMPs to these different farming practices? We need to know what they all are to better focus our efforts if we're going to go forward. Characterise representative target farmer groups. What is their demography, socioeconomics? What are their aspirations? So that we can get an idea of, are we barking up the wrong tree? Could they not care about these BMPs in 5 years because they've sent their kids off to the city and they just want to relax? Who knows what they want? With national production targets in mind, this is the Indonesian targets, identify physically suitable sites for monodon farming. We have to assess the cost effectiveness of infrastructure remediation. If we're going to meet if Indonesia is going to meet those monodon production targets in 4 years, they need to produce an extra 60,000 tonnes per year. If the smallholders are going to do that, 20,000 hectares are going to have to be put into 5 shrimp per square metre production. Now that's going to require a lot of infrastructure investment. Is the Indonesian government interested in doing that? We have to ask the question. And identify constraints to extension service delivery, public and private sector. Because one of the suggestions from the reviewers was, you won't be able to do this without the private sector. That modernizer transition from traditional to modernizer usually occurs in association with the private sector. And it was like the gentleman, said this morning, the pull factor is often going to be from the private sector for this sort of BMP program and certification adoption. And then only if it's realistic to proceed, use a multidisciplinary systems approach, again, with all of those skills and competencies represented in the project team, clarify the main causal pathways for white spot disease in representative systems and sites. Simplify, on the basis of that, simplify the programs to better fit evolving farming systems. Build scientific capacity with our government colleagues. Build extension capacity within DNAS and the private sector if necessary. Achieve proof of concept and proof of delivery for programs in representative farming systems and sites. I bet you've got a huge variation in sites and systems here in Indonesia and in the other country, in India and in the other countries. Have you validated your BMP programs across those different systems? I think we're a bit remiss going in and saying, oh, this will help you, when we don't really know. Work closely with the private sector and, where appropriate, all levels of government in intensification and scale out. As I said, recognising the degree of difficulty of what we took on, the project's been favourably reviewed and further work recommended, strong commitment from the Indonesian side, and we're currently exploring funding options for further work, starting with ACR. Thank you. And just before closing, I'd like to thank particularly, this group, our hard workers in the field, but this group here, including this gentleman and this gentleman. He's not here right now, and this one over here too. But they've been a big help to us. Thanks very much.